Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
If you're a farmer in New York State, join the New York State Grown and Certified program to let people know your food is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, where we bring the culture to horticulture.
Do we dig them?
We do dig them with our hands.
But not for long.
Not for long. So you're listening to us on Heritage Radio Network, and we're broadcasting from two repurposed shipping containers at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And what you, as the listener, may or may not know is that there is a garden on top of these containers, which produces food for the amazing pizza and the cuisine here at Roberta's. The containers house Heritage Radio Network so that we can discuss all things food and plant related. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc., and we design, install, and maintain gardens in the New York tri-state area, rooftops and backyards. And today in the container, we're going to kick off a three-part segment concerning technology and horticulture. Yes, the two shall and have met. As gardeners, historically, we pride ourselves in the notion that for the home garden, the human hand will never be replaced by technology. But then, this summer, all that changed when I saw a video on social media about the FarmBot.
It blew our mind.
It blew our mind. So today, we are going to talk about this new approach to the home-scale, DIY-scale kitchen garden. And we have an amazing guest, Rory Aronson, who's the developer of FarmBot, on the phone, calling in from headquarters in California. Welcome, Rory.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So, Rory, we'd love to hear more about your background and how did you think to merge this technology with robotics and why horticulture as an application? Tell us a bit about that and the open source platform.
Sure. So I studied mechanical engineering while I was in school, but I have a pretty broad range of interests. And so I took an organic agriculture class, which kind of opened my eyes to food production and, you know, the technological processes behind it. And, you know, looking at that system, I thought to myself, well, what if we rebuilt agriculture today? What would it look like? Mm-hmm. And I think it would look something like FarmBot, which is automated. So everything is computer controlled. It's all data driven, really taking precision. A precision-first approach to agriculture. I thought it would look distributed and localized, so rather than having a lot of centralized, huge mega farms, we would have a lot more small farms, you know, in people's backyards, on rooftops, in urban spaces. Mm-hmm. And so some of these ideas, you know, ultimately is what formed the FarmBot idea and concept, which is, you know, a small-scale automated precision food production system.
So if you, as a listener, haven't seen this the video, it is really mind-blowing. It's so cool. It's really cool.
But it's also a little bit, it was a little scary and disconcerting, honestly, Rory, to see it all Like, to have the human hand completely out of it. Do you know what I mean? Coming from where we are in horticulture, you know, where there's so much human, you know, touch. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So can you...
You know, I think if you look at today's agriculture system, most people, the vast majority of people, currently are not really part of the food system at all.
Oh, yeah.
The most that they do is they go to the grocery store and they pick out what they want. But a lot of things are very processed, and, you know, they have no... The end eater, the consumer, has no idea how the food was produced, where it came from, how it was transported and processed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to, you know, open that up a little bit. So even if FarmBot is actually growing the food and the end eater isn't really doing a whole lot, at least it's happening in their backyard. And they are somewhat controlling and dictating how the food is being grown and with what practices and, you know, in what quantities and at what time of the year, et cetera. So they do, we're trying to shift the power structure from, call it just like the mega farm or a corporation, back to the end consumer.
Yeah. So tell, just because we're on the radio, can you describe what the viewer sees in the video? Just like, can you walk us through how FarmBot looks, like, and what it does?
Yeah, so FarmBot is kind of like a really big 3D printer. So it has these tracks that are mounted onto a raised bed, and then FarmBot moves across those tracks. And it's all computer controlled, so it's moving on its own with some motors. And then it also moves left and right and up and down. And then that allows FarmBot to position tools very precisely in the space, in the garden space. And those tools are things like the seed injector, so it can plant seeds, a watering nozzle to water the plants, sensors to learn about the soil, the plants, and the environment in order to farm smarter over time. So it's basically a big, you know, XYZ structure that moves around and grows food for you. You know, very much like a human might move through a garden space and you use your tools and your hands to do certain things. FarmBot works in that way.
Right.
So
and you control this on your phone, right?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You can control this on your phone. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we have a web application that you can load up on your phone or your tablet or your laptop from anywhere in the world, and that allows you to control and configure FarmBot to operate the way you want it to. So you can actually be, you know, at work at your office or on vacation halfway around the world, and you can watch your garden grow, and you can control it from there if you'd like to.
Do you have cameras attached to it, or is that one of the possibilities?
I'm sorry, what was that one?
Can you have cameras attached so that you can see what's going on?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So, FarmBot has a built-in camera that allows you to look at the garden and control everything by watching it. And you could also set up other cameras if you'd like to, just looking at the whole garden or the whole space.
So tell us about the open source platform in case people don't understand what that means.
Sure, yeah. So open source means that all of our source files, the kind of the source inspiration of how to build a FarmBot, that's all freely available online. So that's all of the software, all of the hardware plans, you know, the 3D CAD models, the 2D drawings on how to manufacture stuff, the electronic schematic, all of that information is available online, so that anybody could build a FarmBot on their own. So when you look at the intellectual property, most people would normally get a patent on this intellectual property, but we have open sourced it, which means there is no patent. So people are free to do whatever they want with the technology. It's in the public domain.
Okay. So on your website, there was a really interesting quote. So I'm going to read it from your website. "But if you know your way around open source software and Raspberry Pi and Arduino platforms, a FarmBot in your backyard could change the future of farming." What is Raspberry Pi, other than PIE, which is my favorite thing? tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Raspberry Pi is a low-cost computer. It's about $40, and that's the brain of FarmBot. So it's basically just a standard computer but it doesn't have a screen or a keyboard or a mouse, though you could plug those in if you want, but they're not included with FarmBot. So that's just a very low-cost, widely used computer that runs some open-source software, an open-source operating system, and also the FarmBot software. And then it's plugged into the Arduino microcontroller, which is also a very popular little computer board that allows FarmBot to move the motors and read the sensors and stuff like that.
Okay. So what do you get when you get... So let's say you order a FarmBot. Let's say you don't have the ability to build it from scratch yourself, and you order it, the package. Mm-hmm. What do you get, Rory, when you get that FarmBot box?
Yeah, so you get all of the pieces in one box. Everything is already cut and ready to go, and you just have to assemble it. So we have developed these step-by-step assembly instructions that are available online that show you exactly how to put everything together, and in case you run into problems, there's some troubleshooting tips as well. So essentially it just saves the person a lot of time, because it's a lot of effort to go through and order all the parts individually from various sources.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it's not really even feasible for an individual to do, because you need to order stuff in large quantities in order to get it at a good price.
Right.
Or you need to actually have it manufactured, you know, with equipment, you know, like a laser cutter or an injection molding machine. So for a lot of people, it's not that feasible to build a FarmBot yourself. You'd have to really want to kind of get involved in a project if you're wanting to do that.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why we offer the kit, because most people would rather just purchase a kit.
So the kit,
right,
on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, like 5 being difficulty of putting together IKEA furniture, where is FarmBot?
I'd say it's probably a 7 right now.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's not, you know, impossible, but it's not the easiest thing in the world. I wouldn't recommend it to somebody who hasn't tinkered and built things before.
Okay.
And eventually, we hope to, you know, make it easier and easier, and also maybe ship partially assembled kits. So the setup goes, you know, it's just a half an hour or so to set it up, because it's mostly assembled.
Okay.
But that's a ways off in the future.
Okay. So right now it's geared towards people that are tinkerers, people that want to kind of play around with, you know, that are handy, you know, and that can play around with electronics and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And so the consumer has to provide the lumber and has to build their own raised bed and has to provide the soil. Is that right? Do you give recommendations on the soil?
Yeah, so you're correct. The consumer needs to provide the raised bed or other supporting infrastructure. So, for example, a greenhouse, or you know, maybe they just want to put it on normal soil, or native soil, rather than having a raised bed with store-bought soil. So the consumer needs to provide that, and then we can make recommendations eventually with the software for what type of soil and they should get, and also what types of crops will grow well in that soil and in their environment.
Okay. I want to talk about the crops, because Carmen and I, this is what we do, and,
yeah,
and we're very interested in this. But first, can you elaborate a little bit more on the target market and who it's aimed at?
And talk about
the target market and the demographic?
Sure. Yeah, so right now we kind of touched on that. You know, the target market is somebody who's a tinker, or somebody who has experience maybe with robotics or building their own projects, but also has an interest in food and wants to be able to grow their own food and have control over that process,
mm-hmm,
but maybe hasn't had success with gardening before, or maybe they don't have the time to be able to water a garden and take care of a garden every day in a traditional sense. So they want a tool and a toy to help them with that. That's the initial target market. Eventually, though, we hope to, you know, target a broader audience of people. You know, people who want to grow their own food, but maybe they're not as technically inclined. And so we hope for FarmBot to become easier and easier to use over time, easier to set up. The ultimate goal is FarmBot, we say, as a home appliance. So most people have a refrigerator and a washing machine, and, you know, you basically just plug them in and they work.
Right.
Maybe you have to turn a few knobs and enter in a few settings and press go, but more or less it's a pretty hands-off process. That's what we hope FarmUp to become eventually, is you set it up maybe in about an hour's time, and then you configure a few things, and then FarmUp does the rest. So once we achieve that technologically, then we'll be, our target audience will be quite broad.
Okay, so many questions, Rory. for me, I think my nervousness would be the application part and the software part of it. I think I could figure out, you know, the mechanics and the setting up of the system, but how is the interface, like, between, you know, knowing when to water, knowing when to fertilize? Talk a little bit about that, like the applications, because if you're new to farming and you don't have a traditional understanding of like the hand in the earth and growing your own vegetables, why would this FarmBot be easier than a traditional method?
Yeah, so a lot of that has to do with the knowledge required to grow food. So I think usually the reason why people fail at growing things is because they don't know what they're doing, and also because they're not diligent enough. You know, they don't go out every single day or every other day mm-hmm. to do what needs to be done in the garden.
Yeah.
So FarmBot takes care of that in two ways. One, it's a machine, it's a robot, it's out there all the time, and has nothing else to do other than take care of the garden. So FarmBot's not going to forget to water the plants, and it's not going to get bored of doing it. So we kind of solve that issue of diligence and, you know, requiring the human's constant attention. The other thing is the knowledge on how to grow plants. And we're solving that with an open source database of how to grow plants based on a certain environmental conditions and growing practices. So the goal is that you actually don't need to know how to grow stuff. You just get to decide what you want to grow. You know, I want 20 tomato plants and 5 squash plants and, you know, some potatoes over here and carrots over there. And then FarmBot internally kind of knows what to do from there. Based on your environment, the soil conditions, you know, maybe you want to grow stuff organically or you're fine doing it conventionally, et cetera. And so that's kind of how we're going about it. And then the software is, we're designing it to be really easy to use. So if you've ever played that game Farmville on Facebook,
yeah,
it became popular a few years ago. We're really inspired by that game in development of the FarmBot web application. So the main interface is what we call the drag-and-drop farm designer, which allows you to do, you know, just that. You choose from a list of plants, you choose what you want to grow, and then you drag it into the map view, which is representative of the real-life garden. And then FarmBot knows, okay, this is where I'm going to plant the beets. This is where I'm going to plant the carrots or the lettuce. And then it does the rest from there. So it's a very kind of easy to understand game-like interface that most people kind of intuitively already get because they've seen or played games like that before.
Okay. So does it know then, like you mentioned beets, does it know what depth to bury those beet seeds at versus another variety? Is that
exactly,
all?
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that all programmed
in? Part of that internal data that we're developing is all of that knowledge. How far apart should you space the plants? How deep should they go? How many seeds in each hole? How much to water on day 1, day 5, day 20? What type of soil would this work best in? Should it go in the shady part or the sunny part of the garden? What type of companion plants would go well with this? All of those factors are going to play into the software that allows you to ultimately grow a successful garden.
What does it override? Let's say you want something and it like, let's say you want to plant certain plants together and it doesn't think that's a good idea based on its database. Will it refuse to plant? Like, for example,
it will tell you a strong recommendation.
Okay.
For example, my business partner.
Failure is imminent. But it will ultimately let you do that anyways.
It will not control us, right? We will control it. Right, Rory?
Yes.
Just reassure me here.
I want you to have I need FarmBot to have a voice and an opinion. Then it will be a true gardener. And
right.
I think it needs to have a Scottish voice.
Yes.
It needs to be Scottish.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, it was funny that we're doing this show because recently I saw a video. Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under
right.
Clinton, he, you know, the economist, he talked about robots taking all of our jobs
right.
soon. So he, in a video recently, I don't know if you saw it, Rory, he talked about how robots are going to take all our jobs, and the best thing that the government can do is just give everybody a paycheck. just give everyone a certain amount of money.
But what about the robots? They need a paycheck.
So I thought that was very timely, you know, because he said it's coming sooner than you think. And then here we are talking about... So... I get that, Rory. I get that it makes it simple because certainly Alice and I, one of the frustrations we have with our clients is that they don't pay attention.
Right.
We're not there every
no,
day.
No, you're absolutely right,
They're
Rory.
There every day and they don't pay attention as they should because life, there's other things in life besides your garden.
Right.
And the gardens that we take care of are not edible gardens. They're ornamental gardens. So you could argue they're not essential, so they can forget about it. But some of it to me, some of the pleasure of gardening is getting in there and digging in the dirt and, you know, growing your own food and feeling that.
For instance, I love dirt in my bra,
yeah.
which happens a lot.
Yeah.
Does that happen to FarmBot?
I don't know. We're goofing with you, but
I'm teasing.
Do you know what I mean, Rory? Like, it's sort of like we understand the drive for it and the certain. I could see why it would be enormously popular. For example, my son, who's 17 years old, would love the FarmBot.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't love to garden. He doesn't love to get dirty. He doesn't want to be in the hot sun.
But he loves the robotics part of it.
And he loves the technology. And he would be great mm-hmm. at putting it together and setting it up. So I definitely see, you know, a group of people that would totally be drawn to that, you know?
So, Rory, my question then is, who's helping you on the agricultural side
yeah.
of all this information?
So, no one right now. Or I guess it's kind of a hodgepodge of people. But there's no, you know, specific demographic or group of people. You know, it's really just whoever comes to the project is welcome to help out. And so, the people who have helped out so far, you know, that's a range of software developers, designers, people who are just hobbyists, people who want a project to learn from and a community to be involved with, you know, but we're not specifically going and finding farmers or agronomists to seek their help. Maybe that will come one day, but right now, you know, it's kind of whoever wants to be involved can be and is involved.
Cool.
All right, well, let's take a break. We have to take a couple-minute break. When we come back, we'll go more into the nuts and bolts of it, so to speak, and what kind of, how much produce you get and more details. Stay on the line, Rory. We'll be right back.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TacStar, and this track is called Pianissimo Short.
New York State cares about New York's farmers. That's why we've developed the New York State Grown and Certified program. It's a seal New Yorkers can look for when they're shopping for food that comes from local farms. Customers are more likely to buy food that has the New York State Grown and Certified seal because it tells them that it comes from a farm that follows environmentally responsible, farm-safe protocols. In other words, the New York State Grown and Certified seal tells them their food is grown right here in New York State. You're a farmer with a lot to do, but the time it takes to sign up for the program is a great investment for your business because it lets shoppers know that your food meets higher standards, has passed assessments, and is produced by environmentally friendly farming practices. To learn about participating in the program, go to certified.ny.gov.
Hi, Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We're talking with Rory Aronson of FarmBot about technology and the home gardener. So, Rory, let's get into more of the details. It can detect the weather, right? The robot?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So, how does it do that? How does it like take the information of the weather and then turn that into farming practice, so to speak?
Sure. So it can do that in one of two ways. The easiest way is we can just look up an online weather report and we can figure out, you know, historically what has happened in years past. We can figure out what happened yesterday and also what's the forecast moving forward. And that's generally pretty reliable information. And it doesn't require any hardware sensors on the farm bot side.
Oh.
Which are expensive.
Oh, good.
Right, because
so
that's interesting.
With that information, we can, you know, figure out how to grow our garden in a smarter, more efficient way. The other method that we can use is using sensors on the farm bot or as tools for the farm bot. And that helps us learn more about the specifics of our garden rather than just call it like the general environment that the garden is in. So if we water and we want to figure out our soil moisture retention rate, we can measure the moisture content of the soil every 10 minutes after we've watered, and we can figure out, you know, what is the profile look of the moisture content in the soil over time if we water this much and the temperature is this, you know, this many degrees out. And that also is data that we can use to ultimately grow smarter and more efficiently.
All right.
We're also working on other sensors for pH and temperature of the soil, and that will help us make sure that we germinate things at the right time of year and, learn other things about the soil and the plants that will allow us to be more successful.
So how do you, you just started a Kickstarter. You've been wildly successful on this Kickstarter campaign. It's really remarkable. Congratulations. It's unbelievable the amount of money and the number of units that you've sold. How do you account for geographic differences, like zone, 7 where we are versus where you are in San Luis Obispo?
Yeah, so that again comes from the weather forecast, and you would enter into the web application where you live. You know, what's the growing environment? Are you in a greenhouse? Are you outside? Are you on a rooftop? Are you in the shade or the sun?
Mm-hmm.
And then you also, specify your geographic location so that FarmBot knows, when sunrise and sunset is, and it can pull the local weather. All those different factors is information that the user provides to the FarmBot web app and or the FarmBot figures out on its own.
Mm-hmm. That's really that. This is it's really really a cool idea, and it's remarkable. I really encourage people to go to the website
and watch the video.
Watch the video because it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was kind of wild, Rory. So I'm guessing you've have a few of these of your own that you've grown some vegetables, some edibles,
mm-hmm.
And so tell me, how much produce did you get like in that space, and what kind of produce?
What were you growing?
Yeah, so we've grown a variety of vegetables. I think we've done maybe 13 to 15 different crops so far here in San Luis Obispo, mostly winter veggies, so like leafy greens, as well as beets and some other root vegetables, carrots. And we've sized the farm bot to be just about the right size for one person's vegetable needs continuously.
Mm.
So if you have your farm bot set up and you're growing things year-round, and fully utilizing the space, we estimate that it will grow enough vegetables for one person continuously, which we think is, a relatively appealing
mm-hmm.
amount. And then we're working on devices for families, so larger devices that would be enough for a family of four or five.
Hmm.
So what's, tell us about the crops that you guys offer, and could that, through the open source platform, could I, if something that I wanted was not on that list, could I add to it?
Yeah, so we're going to be entering in a lot of information for, we'll just call it the 30 most common vegetable crops. But we're, the end users are by no means limited to that. Anybody will be able to create their own growing profiles of, you know, whatever exotic crop they want and or with whatever methods they want to use. So even though we're going to provide a lot of the data for successful growing, the end user is not limited by that. They can really control and configure FarmBot however they want it, however they want it.
Is there, are there crops that FarmBot is a challenge to grow, or there, were there any things that you found was a little bit more of a challenge to work that way?
Yeah, so, you know, FarmBot is limited. Right now, it can only do soil-based seed, growing from seed. Mm-hmm. So we can't do anything like from a bulb, like an onion or flower bulb. And we can't do anything like a potato spud or, something like that. And then, you know, FarmBot is also really great for annual vegetables or, something that you grow year after year. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be as useful for something like a berry bush where, you put it in the ground once and it just grows bigger and bigger and bigger every year. It wouldn't be as useful for that. That would be more suitable for like a drip irrigation system.
Right, right. So I have a question about the economics. The FarmBot costs, if you get the kit and everything, is about $3,500. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. So when does it pay for itself, Rory? I'm sure you've, sort of extrapolated that out, When does it pay for itself in produce, so to speak?
Yeah, so we've estimated about 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
And, of course, that's dependent on what you're currently purchasing at the grocery store or the farmer's market. It really depends on, how you use FarmBot, what vegetables you grow, because everything's a different price, comparatively.
Right.
But we do estimate about 3 to 5 years with the current devices. Over time, when we develop lower-cost devices and even larger devices that can grow more food, the return on investment period will come down.
Right.
You can imagine that if the FarmBot costs only $1,000, well, the return on investment period would be 1 to 2 years. And that is really something that we want to work towards, to make the technology more accessible and to, make it more economically appealing to people. But right now, it is a very expensive device, and so the return on investment period is a little bit longer.
Well, I don't think 30. I mean, $3,500. That's not crazy. Like I think it's if you can get it down a little bit, I think $3,500 is somewhat reasonable compared to organic vegetables at Whole Foods.
But and you can. The advantages are obvious. There's no transport. You're saving. From a purely environmental point of view,
uh-huh.
Right? You are not. If you are eating only from the plot, let's say, Rory, you're not paying mm-hmm. for fuel to have any of your vegetables trucked.
Right.
You completely control. You can choose what you want.
There's no water waste.
There's no water waste. Which especially I could see another environmental point. In drought-stricken
right.
times as we are, like Alice and I were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, California drought, everybody knows about. New York has a drought. New York,
right.
Western
Boston is having a drought right
so
now.
So there are real environmental benefits. And the fact that you're making it, open source as people use it and contribute to it,
mm-hmm.
I guess ultimately...
Bigger and better.
It'll just be bigger, better. There'll be more... inputs, more ideas, and the scalability should happen faster, right?
Absolutely, exactly. And it's also important to state that there's a lot of other, call it costs or economic benefits, non-economic benefits. So, for example, like you said, what is the price that people are willing to pay in dollars
mm-hmm.
to lower their carbon footprint?
Mm-hmm.
What is the price that they're willing to pay for a really awesome farming robot in their front yard that impresses all their neighbors?
Yeah.
Right.
What is the price that people are willing to pay for having control over the food that they eat and having control over how it's produced, and they get to choose what they want? And homegrown tomatoes are always better than store-bought. Like,
oh,
that's
yeah.
just a fact.
Absolutely.
So, And even though,
yeah, I get it.
You can't put a dollar amount on it. There right. is value there that people are willing to pay for.
Right, exactly. There's a sort of, and the transparency. Right. You know exactly what is going, you know, exactly how your food is being grown. Even, you know, people, there's skeptics that just, you look at an organic tomato. Is it organic? What does it mean? Natural, yeah. organic. All these terms are thrown around. You don't really
know. And
how
long has it been in that truck? Like, yeah. That's always my guideline.
So in a way, we're going way back by going forward. Do yeah. you know what I mean? Like, we're going way back to how it was done, where you really knew how, yeah. you know, you knew what you were growing. You grew it. You controlled it. But you exactly. had to sweat a lot more.
So yeah. So where are you getting your seed from?
The seeds.
Yeah. Seeds. Yes.
That's up to the user.
Okay. Okay.
You know, again, we're not dictating what type of seeds they need to use or what plants the user can grow or cannot grow.
Okay.
That's all up to the end user. So we'll provide some seeds. You know, a starter pack. But
okay.
You know, at the end of the day, we're just going to suggest people go to their local nursery or, you know, purchase their own seeds online. We'll make a recommendation for, you know, good
sure.
quality seeds.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's all that is up to the end eater.
Okay. Okay. That's cool. Oh, wait. I just had another question.
About weeding?
Oh yeah. So tell us about the weeding aspect.
That's our least favorite gardening task.
And the bug pesticide aspect.
Yeah, sure. So we have, you know, our primary defense against that is polycropping and crop rotation. So by planting things with each other, you know, various different crops together, we can fight off pests and diseases naturally. We can also build the soil and make sure that we don't deplete it of any nutrients. The second defense, though, is our camera system. So, again, FarmBot has a camera that's pointed down. It's looking at the garden all day, every day, and it's taking photos. And then we can analyze these photos and monitor the plant health. We can check out if, you know, identify diseases. We can figure out if something didn't germinate properly. We can also identify bugs and other pests. And then, depending on, you know, how the user wants to grow their own food, you know, they can configure FarmBot to take an action or not.
Okay.
You know, whatever action you want to be, that could be, you know, spray some type of pesticide. Maybe it's a, you know, a petrochemical based one, or maybe it's something kind of natural like mm-hmm. vinegar water or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So you're
that's
saying
really up to the end user how they deal with it, how they decide to remedy the situation.
So how much programming does the end user need to know if they want to add something to FarmBot's kind of repertoire?
Yes. Yeah.
They have to know some programming.
And then one other thing is, you know, the weeding. So we're constantly taking photos and we're identifying weeds in the garden. And so then when we identify something, FarmBot can go. And right now our method of choice for removing weeds is just mechanical disruption. So we're kind of able to smash the weeds and disrupt their little infant root systems. And then, you know, that's the end of that. But you could also, of course, pull them out. You could burn them. You could pour steaming water on them. You could spray some type of pesticide on them. At the end of the day, all of that is up to the end user, how they want to control the weeds.
So FarmBot could be capable of fire if needed.
Yeah.
So I love FarmBot. There's so many things I want FarmBot to do for me.
So let me ask you this, Rory. What would you like FarmBot to be able to do that it can't do yet, but that you're like working on?
Yeah, so I'd really like for it to be able to plant in other mediums. So right now it's really focused on planting in soil.
Okay.
But there's been a lot of interest in planting, you know, in an aquaponics or hydroponics type system.
Yes.
Which would be really great. You know, then it just opens up FarmBot to that much more possibility.
Yeah. Rory, you know, I just keep thinking about your product and how great it would be in the school environment, in these school gardens.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many aspects that you've touched upon that I think education could be a part of. It's really, really remarkable, all the work that you've done. And tell us about the Kickstarter campaign and like when that's ending and how that's all working?
Sure, yeah. You know, so we launched our product in July for pre-order. We ended up receiving now, about 3 months later, we just passed $1 million in pre-sale orders.
It's so impressive.
So that's been really fantastic. We've seen a lot of interest and actually sold a lot of the pre-orders to educators and educational institutions.
Yeah.
And that's because FarmBot's a great teaching tool. It teaches, obviously, how to grow food. It also teaches, mechanics and robotics and electronics as well as software.
I just love it.
So it's really a great hands-on tool that, at the end of the day, produces something really useful.
Uh-huh.
That produces food rather than just being some theoretical project. Or, you know, a project that just ends up in the trash at the end of the day.
Right.
And what I love about
it, a lot of interest from that.
Yeah.
I can imagine. And what's great about it in the school setting is that one of the challenges for school gardens is that there's
summertime.
There's 3 months or almost 3 months where the students aren't around, the teachers aren't around, the PTA isn't around. And that's one of the most productive part times of a vegetable garden. And they need a lot of attention.
Right.
So that would be a great application in a school garden, because then September comes around, the thing is taken care of, and the kids can start, you know, start the next rotation of crops or start harvesting and stuff.
Exactly.
All right, Rory, unfortunately, our time is up. Do you plug yourself, give us your website, and is there any last things you want to tell us about FarmBot?
No, I think we pretty much touched it all. Yeah, check out the website, farmbot.io. We have some cool videos on there and a lot of photos, and you can, of course, look at the documentation if anyone out there is interested in building their own FarmBot or purchasing a kit.
And you're still taking orders, right? And you're starting to ship?
That's correct.
And when are you starting to ship those original orders? February, right?
February, yeah. All orders will be shipping in February. Basically, we've accepted about 320 orders so far. And we're going to manufacture enough parts for 350 FarmBots. So until we reach 350 sales, every order that we receive will be shipping in February.
Good. Good for you. Well, you are doing amazing work. Keep it up. And I might have a client for you. I'm going to talk to them.
And if you come to New York, bring the FarmBot.
Yeah, I would love to see it.
See it in action.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Rory. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. Okay. Thank you for joining us today. We talked about FarmBot. Next week, we're going to talk about the fabrication and economic benefits of manufactured stone walls.
Right.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
That's our second tech topic.
It's a very timely topic, wall building.
Wall building. And then, yes. And then the third part of our series is going to be a review of some phone-based mobile apps for plant identification. There's several out there, and we're going to try and talk to a couple of the designers and do
a little review.
Do a little review. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Join us on Facebook at Groundworks Gardens We Dig Plants, on Twitter at We Dig Plants, and on our Instagram account, Groundworks Gardens NYC. And we also have the new podcast, WeDigPlantsPodcast.com website.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.